Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Coast, a new podcast presented by Offside News Co., your one-stop shop podcast for everything about the NHL's Pacific Division. I'm your host, Casey Lilly-Jord. I run the Edmonton Oilers beat for Offside News, and I'm joined with my lovely co-host.
I'm Catherine, and I'm Catherine Matheson, and I am the Stats Chats columnist and staff writer for Offside News, as well as lifelong Canucks fan. And we also have our graphics, as I'm sure you've noticed, on our Twitter and on our heading by the lovely Marcy Cruz. So thank you to Marcy, who does our incredible graphics. She is a queen, and we are so lucky to get to work with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is the first episode of The Coast, as we've mentioned. Every week we will be bringing you game news, stats, and headlines from around the Pacific Division, covering 8 teams throughout this corner of the West Coast, while also bringing in both of our loves for the Montreal Canadiens and talking about the Habs. So shall we get into it with our first segment?
Of course, our coastlines.
Mm-hmm. Coastlines will be your headlines from around the coast every week, including the ever lovely game scores and standings columns, where we get to talk about how the Vegas Golden Knights are in first all the time.
Yeah. So with our standings, we go by both points and points percentage, just because at this point in the season, there are some teams that have played as many as like 45 games. There are some teams that have played as few as 40. And points percentage is the percentage of points a team has gotten out of the total points available. So for example, if a team had won every single game and they'd play 40 games, they'd have 80 points. And so the points percentage is just the percentage of the highest total amount of points they could have, which is why we are going to mention points percentage, just because it is the most accurate way to look at the standings. But honestly, as of this point in the season, if you go with the standings by points or points percentage, the standing is pretty much the same. And those standings have the Vegas Golden Knights on the top of the Pacific Division, despite having actually a pretty rough week this week. This past week, they got shut out against the New York Islanders of all teams. They lost 2-1 to the struggling New York Rangers. They had a lone win against the Wild with a 1-4 win, and they lost against the also famously struggling Nashville Predators with a 5-3 loss. So it was a rough week in Vegas this week, huh? That's not a very promising weekly roundup. However, the Knights have a very big playoff cushion with 61 points and a 693 points percentage. So they are very comfortably at the top of the Pacific Division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a hard week to be a Golden Knights fan. I will not hide my bias in saying that I am, in fact, an Edmonton Oilers fan and living for this, considering the amount of turmoil they brought my team over the past couple of years. But it's a hard week all around when you look at it, especially in the fact that their defensive core hasn't been playing as best as they could, and they're having some struggles in goaltending, which is a hit or miss depending on things. It's definitely looking like the offseason trade of Logan Thompson is not exactly working out in their favor as they thought it would. But that's the news for Vegas this week. Let's move on to the more promising Edmonton Oilers, who currently sit second place in the standings with 59 points and a 0.67 points percentage. This week, they won 3 of their 4 games, losing, but they lost 5-3 to the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I brought up in this week's article over at Offside News Co., how just because you should win games doesn't mean you will. Their wins this week include a 4-3 win over Chicago, which, looking at it back now, was a win they should have had in the bag. But considering the fact they lost in their second game of the season to the Chicago Blackhawks, the unnamed Chicago team, I am honestly surprised they didn't lose that one. They moved on to a 1-0 win against the LA Kings, who I'm combating this as an Oilers and a Kings enjoyer. Hard game all around to watch due to the factor of very slow hockey all around. There was some really good action in the plays that got Connor McDavid his goal. Leon Draisaitl continued to make a run at the Hart Trophy for this year. But just, it was a lot of 60 minutes of not a lot happening and just some really funny falls on ice and movement. And then finally, they had a 5-3 win over the Minnesota Wild on Wednesday, which means for the first time in since 2018-2019, this is the first time that the Edmonton Oilers have won their season series against the Minnesota Wild. Which is kind of crazy when you think about it, because they've had Connor McDavid on that team for longer. And yeah, we haven't been able to win three games.
Especially because Minnesota, obviously this season, they've emerged as a front runner for one of the top teams in the NHL, struggling a bit recently due to quite a lot of injuries that have pretty much decimated their lineup. But prior to this season, Minnesota was not a great team. They were kind of a playoff fringe bubble team. So it's I'm happy for the Oilers that they're breaking. Well, I'm not. I'm an Oilers hater, but I am happy for you that the Oilers are breaking their Minnesota Wild season series curse, as the Minnesota Wild are kind of coming into their own as a top team in the Central Division.
Definitely. It's a very good outlook when you look at the perspective of how they've played those games and how there's been years where they've completely lost every single game, whether they play three or four in a year. Or there's been games where they just lost one game, whether it be to a fluke goal. But I'm just happy all around. And though it is a bit early for me to speculate, perhaps this is what breaks the Oilers' curse and propels them to the Stanley Cup Finals and for a win this time. Perhaps. And
you know what? Another promising thing that kind of points to that is kind of the variety of their wins. Because one thing about the Oilers this week is they have gone from wins where they have scored five goals to a win where they just scored one. And I think that's a really promising sign to win a variety of games, especially at this time of the year, as the January lulls start getting to everybody. It's really promising that they were able to win a 1-0 game against the LA Kings, especially because the Kings are such a tight defensive team, and you'd think that that's almost Edmonton's kryptonite, where they're like known for their high flying goal scoring, where they rack up goals and points. But the fact that they're able to grind it out in a more low event hockey game is really promising for their postseason aspirations, as much as I hate to admit it.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to and speaking of postseason aspirations, let's talk about the third place at LA Kings, who, if the playoffs started today, say it with me, they'd play the Oilers. Yes. So the LA Kings sit in third place with the 53 points and a .646 points percentage. This week, they had an overtime win against the Winnipeg Jets, a loss to the Calgary Flames 2-1, and a loss to the Edmonton Oilers 1-0, which, when you look at this week's games, they did not have a lot of variety in the fact of their scoring for wins. However, as we mentioned before, the LA Kings play very tight defensive hockey, and it kind of is a testament to that statement that they play low-scoring games and they get results where it is needed. A loss against the Calgary Flames is not wholly detrimental, especially as the Canucks and the Flames bounce back and forth between claiming the wild card spot in the Pacific. It's not a detrimental win when you look at it from the standpoint, but it is also a promising win when you see the effects against the Winnipeg Jets, who have been truly kind of propelled past the standards that everyone thought they would be and are terrorizing every team in the league this season.
Oh, for sure. And like as noted, not only are the LA Kings a tight defensive team with quite good goaltending, but they also really struggled to generate offense, and that showed in their games this week, where they only scored 3 goals over 3 games, which is a goal a game average when the NHL average this season has been over 3 goals a game for most teams. So it's really it's the LA Kings definitely, if there's one area of their game that they need to work on, it is their goal scoring, because you're not going to beat every team 2-1. And they honestly, I don't want to say they were lucky, because they did play a good game against Winnipeg, especially getting 2 goals against Connor Hellebuyck is an impressive feat. But it's not going to be every game where you can win by just scoring 2 goals. So that's definitely an area where they need to work on, especially because their goal scorers, I'd say their main goal scorers are. This is just off the top of my head, so please correct me if I'm getting these stats wrong, but it sounds like their top goal scorers are Kevin Fiala and Quentin Byfield, who have scored quite a few goals for them recently. And while Quentin Byfield and Kevin Fiala are both good scorers, they're also quite streaky, and they're not always consistent goal scorers. You can't always rely on them to get a goal in the third period when you need them. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they're great and exceptional. And Quentin Byfield has his fair share of highlight reel goals, but they're not always reliable. So the LA Kings, if I had one trade deadline wish, I know we're not quite at the trade deadline yet, we're a few weeks away, but if I had one trade deadline preview wish for the Kings, it would definitely be an effective goal scorer, someone they can insert to get reliable goals. Just a sniper. They need someone who will bury those chances. And they're so solid defensively, and they have such strong goaltending. They have really good back check, like all of that stuff they're really good at, but you can't always rely on that stuff, and we're seeing that with a few other teams in the league right now, where you can't always rely on solid defense and solid goaltending, because you still need to get the puck in the other net if you want to win. You can only do so much keeping the puck out of your own net. You got to do something at the other end. So they definitely need to either someone on their team needs to go on a bit of a hot streak and score some goals in some big situations, or they need to find someone who will eventually. And speaking of teams on a hot streak, well, not really, they haven't really been on that much of a hot streak, but the Calgary Flames have moved up this week into fourth place with 49 points, with a 0.57 points percentage, starting off the week with a win in their rescheduled game against the LA Kings 2-1, a win against the struggling unnamed Chicago team 5-2, and then a loss against the St. Louis Blues 2-1. And this Calgary team confuses me. This Calgary team, I'm thoroughly confused. They should be so much worse than they are, and they just
And they're
can't
not.
seem they're not. No, exactly. And they just can't seem to let go of their playoff position. And Jonathan Huberdeau, I wouldn't say he's playing to his contract, because 10.5 million is one of the highest in the league, and he's definitely not playing at that level, but he is playing a lot better than he was last year, definitely earning his money more than he was last year. But yeah, this, and you can kind of see it in the results. Like, they scored 2 goals against the Kings, 5 against Chicago, and then 1 against the St. Louis Blues. Like, they are all over the place, and I cannot figure this team out. And I can't tell if they are going to drop out of the playoff race eventually, or if they're just going to hold on by their fingernails until the very bitter end. And honestly, I don't know what to think about them. I really don't.
It's truly difficult because you see teams like Calgary. It's ones that have had kind of not expected success, and we'll bring this up later when we get to the Habs section of talking about. But it all comes down to the principles of having guys who are goal scorers and having great goaltending. Dustin Wolf has been incredible for the Flames as a kind of rotating within their tandem full time this year after the exit of Jacob Markstrom in the offseason. And it's really working to the Flames' benefits that they have these kind of backhanded skills, and also the perception going into the season that they were going to continue on a rebuild and presumably pick higher than they did last year with ninth overall. So they're truly living up to the wild card spot when you look at it. But it'll be interesting as we move into the latter half of the season to see whether or not they hold on to that playoff spot, or if a team like the Canucks will beat them out.
Yeah, and on that note of a rebuild, it's really interesting to think about kind of where their team is in terms of age and contracts. A lot of their players that are signed more long-term contracts, with the exception of someone like Dustin Wolf, who has been playing exceptionally as a rookie, but most of their kind of more experienced players. Huberdeau, for example, Uyghur, Kadri, they're kind of big stars. They are they're getting a bit older, and they are kind of they're past their 30s. They're kind of hitting that aging curve, and it will be interesting in a few years if perhaps they kind of regret this season of being in more in the middle to good versus kind of committing to the tank if they don't have a top whatever pick. When they could have, and they're kind of stuck with an aging core. But it'll be interesting to see how they look back on this season, considering that they are well outperforming expectations. No one expected them to be in a wild card spot, although I don't believe they will be in that same spot at the end of the year. I think it will be the fifth place Vancouver Canucks, who have 48 points with a 0.588 points percentage. And I just gotta say it, they had a rough week. They had a rough week. They had a rough week made worse by the bright spot in the middle. They had a loss against Carolina, a 2-0 shutout. They got a win against Toronto. They shut out Toronto for the first time ever in Toronto, with a Kevin Lankinen shutout, his fourth of the season, and then they lost against Winnipeg 6-1. The thing about I'm gonna kind of not skirt over, but kind of skirt over the Carolina loss. But the thing about the Winnipeg loss that was particularly disappointing to me is that it came off the heels of such a good performance against Toronto. They had contributions from everyone up and down the lineup. Elias Pettersson was getting his teammates chanting Selke on the bench as he skated by because he had such incredible defensive moves in the third period, especially. And then to go into Winnipeg with all that good momentum, with all of the vibes around the team, with Phil Peronic coming back into the lineup from injury, and to lose 6-1, very disappointing. The only bright spot in that game was Nils Höglander scored his first goal in a while. And I think Nils Höglander has something against Hellebuyck, because he has scored 10 goals in his 15 or so games against Winnipeg.
Oh,
And
wow.
I think he's somehow 24-year-old Nils Höglander is Connor Hellebuyck's kryptonite, which is a really interesting phenomenon. But not to go on a little goalie nerd tangent, but it's because, in my opinion, Connor Hellebuyck is one of the best goalies in the world at east-west shots. So that is shots that go laterally, side to side. And he's really not the best at defending against north-south, so like point shots, straight shots. And the goal Nils Höglander scored, if you go watch it, he skates straight up the side of the ice, gets it at the point, and r absolutely rips it. And Hellebuyck does not see the puck at all. He's completely lost, and Hogs just gets one past him. So good week for Nils Höglander, which is good because he's getting himself out of the doghouse. But hopefully the Canucks are able to bounce back. Obviously, I'm not, as a big fan of the Canucks, I'm not the happiest with their performance, and I wish they did better. I was very happy with their win over Toronto. Always love beating the Leafs. But And I knew we would probably struggle against Winnipeg just 'cause Hellebuck is such a good goaltender, but I wish there was I wish there was some more consistency, honestly. If I had to be honest, it feels like we're jumping all over the place with that team, and I just want them to bang out some wins. I think it's time for a good win streak. We're mostly healthy. We've kind of put the adversity behind us. Like the trade rumors are settling down. No one's talking about how JT Miller and Elias Pettersson are fighting and excluding each other and not inviting each other to their birthday parties anymore. So hopefully we'll be able to move past that and move into the latter half of the season with more positive energy. And speaking of positive energy, a team that doesn't have positive energy right now, the Anaheim Ducks. Yeah, the Ducks.
The Ducks have had a week. They lost 6-2 to the St. Louis Blues. This was Cam Fowler's first game as a Blue, coming back to Anaheim after they traded him right before he hit 1,000 games in the organization. They went on to lose 6-0 to the Philadelphia Flyers, which we all remember the Jamie Drysdale Cutter Gauthier trade. We all remember that day on Twitter a year ago, and it was truly kind of an FU moment from Philly towards the Ducks. And nothing more than that. They truly struggled this game, and then they brought back the energy, especially Cutter Gauthier, who had supposedly circled this game on his calendar and has, fueled the animosity between the Ducks and the Flyers following his trade from the team, in the fact that they won six, or not six, they won 3-2 over the Carolina Hurricanes, which is especially shocking considering that Carolina has been a very consistently good team this year. And then finally, they closed off their week with a loss against the Washington Capitals 3-0.
Yeah, 41 points, 0.466 points percentage, not even at NHL 500, which, yeah, the Ducks are in a rough spot. And I've said this about the Ducks as early as the beginning of this season, where in my captaincy piece, available to read on offsidenewsco.com, I talked about Radko Gudas and how naming him captain didn't really fit with the Ducks' kind of identity. Like the Ducks, they have a lot of young, skilled players. They have Trevor Zegras, who is injured right now, I believe. They have Owen Zellweger. They have Troy Terry isn't that young anymore, but he's quite skilled. They have Mason McTavish, yes. Cutter Gauthier. I was thinking Mason Mount, but that's footy. Sorry, Mason Mount. Mason McTavish, Olin Zellweger, all these young, very skilled players. But Radko Gudas, he's neither young nor known for his skill. He's more known for his kind of big, almost like stereotypical enforcer type vibe. And with the addition of Jacob Trouba, it really feels like Greg Cronin is trying to make the team tougher and more big and bad, but he's he's trying to make the team more big and bad and more tough, but he's working with a team of mostly young skill players. And I mean, there's only so much you can do when you're trying to create a big bad identity with a team of under 25-year-old skill guys.
Yeah, especially we've kind of moved past the era of, so to say, the Broad Street Bullies. That's been a big one in conversation lately in Philly, and just how, you can't really expect a bunch of guys to fight when you've got two bigger known hitters and then a bunch of guys who range from 6'2" and under.
Yeah.
It's not exactly going to work. And but the Ducks, I would like to say perhaps it looks optimistic for them. I am also of the opinion that they are, it's a miracle they're holding sixth place and not lower. But speaking of lower teams that did not expect to be here this season, the seventh place Seattle Kraken, who currently are sitting at 41 points with a 0.456 points percentage, who had an interesting week, to say the least, in losing 6-2 to the Columbus Blue Jackets, winning 6-2 to the Buffalo Sabres, losing 6-2 to the Detroit Red Wings, and winning 4-2 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They really love their multiples of two.
Yeah. First of all, I'd just like to say, what? Because when you lose by the other team scoring 6 goals against you, and then you win by scoring 6 goals, and then you lose again with the other team scoring 6 goals against you, then you win by scoring 4 goals, the only correct answer is, what? And by what, I actually mean Philip Grubauer, because the source of a lot of the gripes with this team is Philip Grubauer. Joey Decor has been a much, much better goalie in net than Philip Grubauer. The team in front of neither of them is great. Like, let's I'm sorry, any Kraken fans who are listening, but the team in front of them is very middling, and I don't say that in a bad way. I don't say it in a good way. It's just very middling. It's full of good players, but there's no one on that team who is great or who's a superstar or who's going to be the one to kind of take the game on their back and sort of run with it. And there's no one who really stands out. They're all kind of on the same level of in the middle. And Joey Decord is a better goalie than Philip Grubauer. He is performing quite well, but that's mostly in an indication of Philip Grubauer's struggles, because he has struggled quite a bit, and he has been well under, he hasn't even gotten above a 900 save percentage since being traded to, or since being acquired by Seattle in the expansion draft. And he did have quite good numbers when he was in Colorado. He had up to even like a 920 one season, like very, very good numbers. But that was mostly because the Colorado team in front of him in 2019 was such a high quality team, and had such strong defense that they were able to kind of insulate him a little bit. But with a less strong defense in front of him in Seattle, he has struggled mightily, and he has not been able to get back to his Colorado heights, shall we say. So he's struggled, and the team has struggled. And honestly, I think the best quote about the Kraken comes from an article in The Athletic, which is, Seattle is running in place. And I feel like I say this. Casey and I have done a few test episodes before this one. I feel like I've said this in all of them, but Seattle... It seems like Ron Francis, their GM, has bet and put all his chips in on the fact that their season 2 years ago, 2021-22, their season 2 years ago was not a fluke, but was, 2022-2023. Sorry, misspoke, but that was not a fluke, but that was indicative of their potential. But unfortunately, 2022-2023, the Avalanche, they beat the Avalanche in the first round, but the Avalanche were quite injured, and they were missing quite a lot of their key players for various reasons. And that season, their only 100-point season, and the only time making it into the playoffs and pass the first round, there was a lot of luck on their side to make that season happen. And unfortunately, since that season, they have only gotten worse, and that's pretty typical of Ron Francis' teams. Unfortunately, his teams in Carolina that he built were very much good but not great. They would either make the first round and get knocked out, or they would just be on the bubble. And With Seattle going through a new coach and trying to elevate some of their younger stars like Shane Wright and Matty Beniers, I just honestly, I think the one solution to the Kraken problem is to get a new GM. Perhaps it's time for Ron Francis to move on from that franchise, and I'm not sure how Seattle fans feel about him. I am not as in tune with the Seattle fan base as I maybe should be, but yeah, it's not looking great for Seattle, and though there are some bright spots in their lineup with players like Shane Wright performing okay. Matty Beniers is having a pretty good season. Same with Joey Decord. It's
And
just the
Kaapo Kakko, who has really found his place on the, who's really found his place on the team after being traded there from the Rangers.
Yes.
He's part of the re he's one of the best trades that Seattle has acquired in the past couple of years, but it's also very interesting to see what happens going into the rest of the season and as he gets even more comfortable with the team. There's not a chance that, especially in a division that's as strong as this one is, compared to the East Coast, who anyone could make the wild card spot with how things are going over there. The Pacific and the West is pretty much locked in as it seems right now. So let's hope the Kraken have better luck with having Kaapo from the start next season and possibly also bringing in some more young talent through a high pa draft pick.
Yeah.
Speaking of high talent and top draft picks, let's move on to our final team in the division, the 8th place San Jose Sharks, who currently sit at 34 points and a 0.370 points percentage. Oh, Sharkies.
Oh boy. Yeah, they are just below the Chicago, unnamed Chicago team for the worst record in the NHL, with a loss to Utah, a loss to Minnesota, and a win against Detroit this week. And if there's one thing about the Sharks, it's that
They know how to snap a losing or they know how to snap a team's winning streak.
they do. And I was also going to say is that when they are given the opportunity against a goalie to score a lot of goals, they will in fact score a lot of goals. And their young talent and some of their free agency acquisitions have been key to this. Obviously, most of the attention is going to Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith, who have been really exceptional for two rookies playing and working together. But some other notables, Tyler Toffoli has been playing quite well and in a more mentoring role. And yeah, the Sharks, they are exactly where they are supposed to be. They're just coming out of a really harsh tank in order to get Macklin Celebrini, and they need some time to kind of build their lineup back up into kind of like an official NHL lineup instead of just a few NHL players and
Handful
some
of rookies.
fill-ins. Yeah, some rookies, some less experienced players, and they need a bit of time to kind of build their lineup back up to an actual competitive lineup, but they are exactly where they should be. They're right on the right path. They're probably going to get another top five draft pick this year, and that's exactly what exactly is that is exactly what they need. They're doing exactly what they should, and the vibes seem good. They're allowing Celebrini and Smith to flourish, and yeah, the vibes seem good in San Jose. I've seen nothing but positive things from the San Jose media.
It's truly a testament when you compare it, especially to when you look at Chicago and how things are going there, where despite San Jose losing games, there seems to be a general positive attitude around the locker room within the team, comparatively to Connor Bedard's unnamed Chicago team and how there is not sort of a light right now of progressive growth, but it will come down the line. But San Jose, and quote me on this, will come back to bite me in 2 years when we do the podcast, but it is going to be really interesting to see who San Jose brings in over the next couple off seasons in terms of both acquisitions through trade and as well as the drafts. And as we've seen in the past couple games, especially highlighted when you look at their win against Detroit last week and also that the one game against the Seattle Kraken where they scored 7-2, they are going to be a highly offensive team that knows how to score goals and knows how to position themselves in a place to win those games. And though they don't have the defensive structure for it now, I do think they are going to be a really prominent driving force and having a good blue line in order to protect their goalies.
Yeah, for sure. Agree with everything that you said. The Sharks are in a great position right now. And I think the attendance, you might look at the attendance numbers and think, wow, that's concerning that they only have 10,000 people in attendance, but that's pretty standard. They're not playing especially well. And I'm sure that as soon as the Sharks start winning more than they lose, the crowds will all come back. San Jose is a pretty... It's not a typical hockey market, but it is a very passionate one, and we saw that in the mid to late 2010s when the Sharks teams were doing quite well and in the playoffs with players like Joe Thornton and the gang. So I'm definitely sure that the people will come back. The vibes will come back. The vibes are good right now. They've got young players. They're developing them, and they're exactly where they should be. And I'm excited to see the next step they take next year. Not to say that the season is a write-off or anything. They're still going to play their games, but they're prioritizing what they should be, which is developing their young players and just getting another high draft pick in the first round and looking to improve for next season instead of having a more short-term goal of improving for this season, because that is not achievable. But in the next season or even two seasons from now, that definitely is. And that concludes our game scores and our standings. We've made our way through the entire Pacific Division, and now we go on the pier. Usually on the pier would be our off-ice news. However, this week in the Pacific Division, it was pretty quiet. The January Blues have gotten people. Petey and Miller are inviting each other to birthday parties again. So it's been all quiet on the Western Front, one might say.
The biggest piece of news, though, and technically this counts both off ice but on ice as well, is that Drew Doughty has been seen skating again for the LA Kings. Yes. He's in a contact jersey earlier today, and it's looking like he is getting even closer to returning ahead of schedule. Originally, after he was injured in the preseason, it was anticipated that he would come back after the Four Nations break that takes place in February, but it's looking like that. Like Phil Peronic, he may be rejoining the lineup sooner than expected. Aside from that, our off-ice news is more so the Oil. Like we said earlier, the Oilers finally won their season against the Minnesota Wild, but also that the teams across the Pacific are getting even closer to the Four Nations break, in which we see a lot of superstars head their way out to the wonderful cities of Montreal and Boston in order to play some good old fashioned international affairs on ice, in having the best on best between Canada, Sweden, the US, and Finland face off.
To quote our lovely staff writer, Parker, everything is about hockey, except for hockey, which is about international affairs. And that will be on full display on the Four Nations break, and we cannot wait. But the January Blues have hit the Pacific, and other than that, the off-ice news is quite quiet. Maybe for our next episode, a team or two will pick up the phone and make a trade or something like that. Not to summon bad vibes, but one can only hope. Now we
I will bring up the bad vibes. They were saying Matt Barzal to Winnipeg the other day. I think Matt Barzal to a team I like, because, you know, I may hate the Islanders, but he's pretty okay at hockey. We need someone out here needs something, especially with a lot of stars who we don't have a lot of stars for this year's trade deadline, and especially going into the offseason. Not a whole lot of people whose contracts are up. But
yep.
As we move on to teams I'm that still have holding, contracts coming up.
I'm still holding tight to my Rasmus Anderson to the Canucks agenda. It will happen. It's coming. Patrick Alvin is working on something. Rasmus Anderson will be a Canuck by the deadline. Am I losing faith a little bit? No. No. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Calgary will give him up and he will be ours. Anyways, that's unrelated. Let's talk about the Habs.
Yay! So in our East Coast News Flash, this is our segment where we talk about the lovely Montreal Canadiens and also one other team from across the league, because while we are a Pacific Coast podcast, we should bring up some of the other guys in the league. You know, they may not be important as important as we are, but we still love them. Kinda.
and we do follow the rest of the league, we promise. We are good reporters and we pay attention to the NHL. But first, our beloved Habs.
Mm-hmm. So the Montreal Canadiens had a very good week this week. They had an overtime win against the Washington Capitals 3-2. They did have a shootout loss against the Dallas Stars 2-1. But when you look at it this way, it was a shootout loss. They dragged that on for how long? Pretty good. And then they won 3-5 against the Utah Hockey Club. What are your thoughts on this week, Kay? Because it's been pretty busy in terms of wins, but also busy in terms of off-ice news.
Yeah, so best wishes to Emil Heinemann, who got hit by a car in Utah and will be out for 3 to 4 weeks. That news is not funny. Genuinely, all the best wishes for him. I hope he is okay, and I'm glad that he's able to recover. The funniest part about it is that he told his teammates by telling them he would not be able to make it to dinner for, quote, for the reason of, quote, a funny story, which is exactly how I would break the news to my friends if I got hit by a car as well. Heinemann, you are an absolute legend.
Mm-hmm. He truly embodies the Gen Z spirit, because fully when I got a concussion 2 years ago after slipping on ice, as all Canadians do, I texted my friends going, LMAO, just fell and hit my head. Still passed my final, though, to all of them replying, please go to the hospital. So, him and I have that alike in humor to cope, and the fact that, aside from, you know, that being terrible and that happening, the Habs have been on an unexpected hot streak. Well, unexpected to the rest of the league, expected for us. They may have all called me crazy.
We have been Habs truthers since the beginning. And well, currently, I do not believe the Habs are in a wild card spot. They are just outside of it. And their win streak this week, getting points in the singular game that they lost, has helped with that. And I am just looking at the Atlantic Division standings right now. And they are only 2 points out of a wild card spot, only behind Ottawa and Columbus. And they have played one less game. They have played one less game than Columbus. And it honestly, they, since Patrick Laine has come back to the team, they have looked like a whole new team, and Laine has been an absolute beast, especially on the power play. He is a power play machine, Patrick Laine is, and he's really helped their season. He's turned around the vibes, he's turned around Their goal scoring, they're getting some more goal scoring from the top line, especially on the power play. And while he's, I don't think he's at 100% just yet, his 5-on-5 numbers are not the greatest. It is really promising that he is producing at such a high rate, even if it is with the man advantage. And Montreal, they're another team similar to the Sharks that are on the up and up, and they are in just the right point of their cycle. They tanked, they got their first overall pick in Juraj Slafkovský, and now they are on the way up, and it's looking like they could make the playoffs as soon as this year with how tight the Eastern wild card race is, with only 4 points separating the first wild card and, sorry, 5 points separating the first wild card, which is Boston, and the like middle kind of six teams on the Eastern Conference table, which is Ottawa, Montreal, Detroit, Philly, and Pittsburgh. So it's within reason that Montreal could make the playoffs as soon as this year, but even if not, then next year they will be able to make their comeback, because it's been a really promising streak since Patrick Laine came back, and I'm so happy for the Habs. They deserve it all. They're really my East Coast babies.
It's truly a good thing, especially when you see Lane Hutson and how he is continuing to dominate. He has 35 points in 43 games with the team, which is incredible when you consider the jump from the NCAA to the NHL and how usually that takes some transition time. And also, in another young star on the come up, David Reinbacher has been seen skating. He, as we all remember, Laine and Reinbacher were taken out in the same game 5 minutes apart against the Leafs in the preseason. Reinbacher had a timeline of looking like that he'd come back at the end of February, but has shown that he's been skating on ice and is getting closer and closer to being on the comeback. Whether or not he joins the Canadiens right off the bat or he spends some time down in Laval, it is incredible to see that the Habs, for the first time probably ever, are starting to look like a healthy hockey team.
For sure. And another person who is having an absolutely great year. There are a lot of people on the Habs who are having a great year, but I wanted to mention Cole Caulfield. And Cole Caulfield is a goal scorer by trade, and he's been known as a goal scorer, but he's never quite been able to break the 30 goal mark. But at the 43 game mark of this season, he has scored 24 goals and looks to be well on his way to a 40-goal season. Cole Caulfield has been one of the most impressive scorers in the league this year. He was in the early race for the Rocket, and I think he is still one of the top goal scorers in the league, if I rem remembering correctly. And he is just having an amazing season, and he's only 24. He just turned 24 a few weeks ago. And he's having a great year, and I'm really happy for him. The young core that the Canadians have with players such as Cole Caulfield, as well as Nick Suzuki, Lane Hutson, Reinbacher, even the goalie Montembeau, they have a great young core, and I'm really excited to see what they can do in the next this year and the next few years. They're in a great spot to make some noise in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, especially when you see also one other young player who's had a phenomenal start has been Jacob Dobbs. He was recalled from Laval and has instantly bolstered us to having a more productive tandem, which is exactly what you want to see from our young goaltenders. He's been putting up incredible numbers in just a short amount of games. And he also gets the start tonight against the Dallas Stars, which
Yeah,
will be
so
interesting to see.
speaking of goaltenders for our other team, I want to mention the Winnipeg Jets, specifically Connor Hellebuyck, because I think we should give the Jets their flowers. The Jets, though they've had some playoff struggles, they've had many, the Jets have been one of the most consistent teams, and they have one of the most effectively built teams in the entire NHL. They have a strong forward group with Scheifele and Kyle Connor having outstanding years so far. Scheifele has found his game in his post-30 life, and He is doing his thing. He's found his 200-foot game. Well, previously he was known only as a sniper, but he's found his defensive game. Kyle Connor has been an amazing sniper. They have a really solid blue line and a solid lineup of centers, including Scheifele and Vilardi is one of them. But the man I want to talk about who's in the Hart Trophy conversations is Connor Hellebuyck. Jesse Granger at Jesse Granger underscore on Twitter posted this chart yesterday of Connor Hellebuyck's stat visualization on NHL Edge. And if you look at it, if you're not sure how to read a stats visualization, if you go look at the tweet, the higher the little dots are to the edge of the circle is the better the person is at that skill. And Connor Hellebuyck's little stats dots are almost all the way to the edge of the circle. He is in the high 90th percentile. I'll read this out to you because it is absolutely incredible. He's in the 99th percentile for goals against average, 99th percentile for overall save percentage, 95th percentile for high danger save percentage, 90th percentile for mid-range save percentage, 99th percentile for percentage per games or percentage of games over 900, 97th percentile for goal differential per 60, 97th percentile for goals for average, and 97th percentile for points. If you're counting at home, that is every single metric except for high danger and mid-range save percentage is above 97%. Connor Hellebuyck is having an absolutely exceptional season, and there's no goalie in the league who's touching him. He has the Vezina pretty much locked up with his six shutouts at just over the halfway point this season. He is in the Hart conversations for the first time since Carey Price in 2014 with his absolutely outstanding season with the Habs in 2014. And I just think more people should talk about Connor Hellebuyck because he's an exceptional goalie and he deserves way more credit. Credit to the Jets, but also the man between the pipes is doing his job and doing it exceptionally well at only 31 years old, which is pretty young for a goalie.
It's definitely very impressive, and I hate to give any credit to the Jets, speaking as an Oilers fan, but you look at his numbers and you look at his statistics, and and it is so hard to converse to comprehend how he is not in conversation for topics more so like the Hart and the Vezina, and it is truly kind of showing the how Winnipeg is not even just a smaller market, but an underappreciated one in the fact that they have some of the best talent in the league and they don't get their flowers for it. So it is very, very good that Hellebuyck is getting the conversation around him, and it will be so good to see him in Four Nations.
For
But
sure.
I really hope that the public perception of the Jets is a little more positive in that we move towards people actually kind of taking them seriously.
Yeah, for sure. I think the main criticism against the Jets in the past few seasons is they've had some absolutely exceptional regular seasons. This time last year, they were the tops of the NHL. But they've just struggled so heavily in the playoffs, and not only the team, but Hellebuyck as well. But Hellebuyck is on a heater, and I don't know if I'm taking any other goalie over him, even in the playoffs. So hopefully some more high intensity hockey in the middle of the season with Four Nations, who Hellebuyck will likely be the starting goalie for Team USA. Hopefully some high intensity hockey earlier in the season will prepare him better for the playoffs, and he'll be able to perform better than he has in past seasons. So we'll keep tabs on the Jets. They deserve their flowers, and Hellebuyck especially so.
And with that, we conclude our East Coast news flash, and we move on to our final section of the podcast, our Fisherman's Almanac. So this section, as we close off, is the upcoming games within the Pacific and our predictions for the scores, because these podcasts are recorded on Thursdays and will be posted for all you lovely listeners on Fridays. We've made it so that we don't get ahead of ourselves by doing the Thursday games, and so we will bring you every game afterwards and what we believe our scores were. And every week, we'll get to check back in on the previous week and see how far off base we were.
So starting our first upcoming game of the week after Thursday, because reminder, we're recording this on a Thursday, is on January 17th, the Vegas Golden Knights versus the Carolina Hurricanes in Carolina, which that should be a good matchup. I'm excited to see that, but I think Carolina's taking it. The Vegas Golden Knights have been struggling, the Canes have been on a bit of a hot streak. The Knights have been struggling with their goaltending, and the Canes have an aggressive, fast offense. I don't know. I think the Canes are taking it. I think it's gonna be, maybe it will be close, but I think the Canes are taking it. I'm gonna say 3-1.
I do think the Canes take this one as well, even though they did lose out earlier this week when they were on the Pacific Coast with their game against or their game against the Ducks. I do think they also lose this game as well, because it's truly it would just be really funny. I think I take this game 3-1 as well. I do think because they have such high intensity scoring chances, I do think they will get a goal, but I do not think they will be able to match Carolina. And then our next games are a lovely Saturday night or Hockey Night in Canada matchup
Not
in.
only Hockey Night in Canada, it will be Hockey Day in Canada. So it is a celebration of hockey. And just a reminder, I'm sure Sportsnet has posted it on various websites, but the different games will be broadcasted in different languages. So if you speak Spanish or I'm trying to remember the ones that in the different languages, but I'm pretty sure one of the games is being broadcast in Spanish, another is being broadcast in Tagalog. But go check out the Sportsnet website if you want to listen to a game broadcast in the language that you speak in your first language. They have that special broadcast for Hockey Day in Canada.
It is always fun when they do that, especially because this is not a singular cause. They do it throughout the season. We saw one of the first Hockey Night in Canada's, the Edmonton Oilers had a Punjabi broadcasted game, which I think is awesome. And then also they've been bringing it more so in across different days, with Hockey Night in Canada being the main broadcasting sector point, but also Hockey Day in Canada being one of the biggest showcases for every single team. So with the first matchup, we had the Edmonton Oilers versus the Vancouver Canucks, which we like to call it over here the Podcast Bowl.
Yeah, our battle of the co-host. And actually the Oilers and the Canucks won't be playing. It will just be live footage of Casey and I fighting in a parking lot, a Denny's parking lot to be specific.
Well, of course, I will say I think the Oilers take this game. I think, much like how the last game occurred, I think it's a 7-2 win and Connor Brown gets a hat trick this game, because in the last game, if you don't remember, he scored 2 goals, of course, on the one day where I had him benched in fantasy.
Your poor fantasy. I have faith in my Canucks. Although I don't think they are a fire wagon offense. I think it will be close. I'm gonna go 4-3, but for my beloved Orca boys, 4-3 for the Canucks.
Yes, for sure. And then the other games include the LA Kings versus Seattle. I do think that in this matchup, I do think that the Kings take it. I think they take it in most likely a case of 2-1 in overtime, just because it seems to be a common trend that these teams like scoring 2 goals.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think LA is a superior team, but I do think they will shut out Seattle. I'm going to go 2-1
Ooh.
for the Kings with an overtime shutout. Or not an overtime shutout, a regular time shutout. Can't be an overtime shutout.
Overtime shutouts would be crazy. I mean,
A
it
0-0
could.
game and then an overtime. That would be a little insane. But I keep my predictions realistic. I don't think that would happen in the modern high-scoring NHL. As I mentioned earlier, the goals per game average for each team is just over 3. So I really highly doubt it will be an overtime shutout.
Speaking of other shutouts, I have an unpopular opinion, and I think that the Calgary Flames shut out the Winnipeg Jets in this upcoming game. I
Ooh.
think. I don't know who their projected goaltender is, but I do think if they put Justin Wolf in net, I do think they have a chance to shut out the Jets. Let's say 3-0. I'm making bold predictions. None of this matters at the end of the day.
Yeah,
So
wow,
I think the Flames take it. I think they take it in a shutout.
that's very bold, and I will not be that bold. I'm saying Winnipeg takes it 5-2 because Winnipeg is actually an underrated offensive powerhouse. They've been scoring quite a few goals. They have a high offense top line, and I don't think they could be shut out. All respect to Dustin Wolf. I really like that guy, but I just don't think he's stopping that dam or stopping the flow. He's not a dam, unfortunately.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. And then for our next game, we have the Anaheim Ducks versus the Florida Panthers. While I would say I think the Panthers take this any day, they did lose to the Montreal Canadiens a couple weeks ago. But I am still gonna go with the Florida Panthers 5-2. I do think the Ducks lose this one because truly nothing fuels a unprecedented rivalry than having someone who used to be in your division on an opposing team.
For sure. I am also going to say Florida, and I'm going to say 4-1. I think that Kachuk and Barkov, they're going to light it up, and even though the Ducks have a lot of young skilled players, I just don't think they have the offensive po or the offensive p firepower, excuse me, to compete with the reigning cup champions.
And lastly, that brings us to our game, San Jose versus the New York Islanders, in which, while the Islanders did beat the Jack or not the Jackets, did beat the Golden Knights earlier this week, I don't think they have it in them to do it this time. I do think the young power of the San Jose Sharks can definitely beat out the New York Islanders and all their not exactly terrible vibes, but just questioning occurrences. But I do think San Jose takes this game in a tight one where they win 4-3 in overtime. Because if there's anything that the New York Islanders love to do, it's them loving to take a game to overtime.
They do love a good overtime loss. I actually say the Islanders take it. They've been on a little bit of a hot streak, but I do also think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be 3-2 also in overtime.
Because of course.
Because of course. And you know what? I think this is a side prediction, but I think it will be a Macklin Celebrini or not a Macklin Celebrini overtime goal, a Bo Horvat overtime goal to seal the game for the New York Islanders.
Could you imagine? I mean, it could happen. Own goals are a thing.
Yes,
But
it
Bo
could. It
Horvat.
could. I did mean to say Bo Horvat, but then I was looking at our notes and I was looking at the San Jose Sharks and I was like, oh, Celebrini. But no, Bo Horvat. Although both have ties to Vancouver and the Vancouver Canucks, which is why I know them both.
All right, and that brings us to the conclusion of this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed our first show. You can find us at The Coast Podcast on Twitter. You can find us individually at I'm at Lilscore on Twitter and Instagram.
I am at Fishweights on Twitter and at Catherine.Matheson on Instagram. And our lovely graphics designer, Marcy, is at Sincerely Marcy with two Y's on Twitter. So you should go follow her because she makes incredible graphics for us and for others.
Yeah. And you can find all of our other writing on offsidenewscode.com. And until next week, we will see you all later. Bye-bye. Bye.